Hello, I'm Francine, host of Coping to Care, a podcast series sponsored by Blue Sea Care that features guests who share their expertise and life experiences to empower our loved ones in the community. Our aim is to serve as a relevant, genuine, and entertaining resource for seniors and their families. Worldwide, 50 million people are living with Alzheimer's and other dementias, including more than 5 million in the U.S., and according to the Alzheimer's Association, the number is expected to triple by 2050. Along with causing a decline in memory, cognitive ability, and behavior, Alzheimer's is the sixth leading cause of death among adults in the United States. Today, we are pleased to welcome Ann Gray, Executive Director of the Orange County Alzheimer's Association. She'll share with us about the work and the progress they've made fighting Alzheimer's and supporting those with the disease, as well as those who care for them. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be with you today.
Wonderful. Now, why are the numbers expected to triple by 2050? What's happening?
So our population is aging, so that is one factor, but Alzheimer's disease is not a normal part of aging. One in three people over the age of 65 dies with some sort of dementia, and those numbers are increasing for a variety of factors. We're learning more and more about the environmental impact and lifestyle factors that put people at higher risk for Alzheimer's. And unfortunately, as Americans, we are not getting healthier. We're getting more obese, more sedentary, more isolated, and have more comorbidities that contribute to the likelihood that someone will develop Alzheimer's disease.
Wow. Now, is it true that a high percentage of people who reach the age of 85 will be diagnosed with some form of dementia?
It's a very high likelihood that there's more chance that they will die with some sort of dementia after that age because of the one in three statistic over the age of 65 who pass away with some type of dementia.
Oh, wow. Now, what are the 10 early signs and symptoms of Alzheimer's that you could help us with?
Sure. They're really important to become familiar with, and they're on our website at alz.org/10signs. And I'm going to highlight them for you right now because it's important to talk through a few of those. And one is memory loss that disrupts daily life. So that means something like you can't find your way to the grocery store, or the recipe you always made from memory you can no longer create, or you are calling your watch a hand clock because you can't come up with the proper word, so you call it something else that serves the same function. So those types of things that you start to notice, or you start to notice in a loved one, are definitely cause for a conversation with your physician. Another one is challenging situations in planning or problem solving that haven't been an issue for you before, where you may need to figure out how to navigate something that has several steps and you can't make it from A to B. So those types of things are really important because they can lead to things that put the family finances at risk, or somebody's executive function in the workplace could be called into question and they could be fired for not doing their job well, when what they really need is to be put on a medical leave and disability due to a diagnosis of dementia. So, people's careers and finances can suffer significantly through the loss of executive function. And then the difficulty completing familiar tasks is another one. Just, the things that you normally do, if you can't set the dryer, or you can't remember the alarm code to your house and you don't remember it later, those kinds of things are key to think about. Confusion with time and place, not knowing if it's summer or winter or if it's day or night, those are more severe signs. And then visual spatial relationships, we took very great care in designing our office in Orange, knowing that people with dementia would be coming in with their caregivers to meet with us, because anything with a dimensional pattern can be very destabilizing for people with Alzheimer's because they have a depth perception and spatial perception issue. And these things can start to show up early in driving, for instance, where maybe they don't anticipate stopping correctly and they tap someone's bumper, or, you know, they're putting the car in drive instead of reverse and having issues. So I think that it's very important to look for those signs as well. New problems with words or speaking, like I described before, if people can't come up with the right word, that's a very important sign. Misplacing things and not being able to retrace their steps to find it. You know, there's, you know, a lot of humorous scenarios that families share with us that aren't funny at the time, and certainly not funny to the people experiencing it, where they found items that, you know, their loved ones accused them of stealing, and then they'll find, you know, the wallet in the microwave or the car keys in the freezer, you know, those types of things, you know, that aren't normal or things to really look for. And then decreased and poor judgment, where somebody would, you know, never do something in their past and then suddenly they're taking more risky behaviors. That's certainly something to look for. Withdrawal from work and social activities. If people aren't feeling able to follow conversations or they're embarrassed because of the other symptoms, you know, that I've mentioned, and they kind of retreat into being more isolated, that's something to look for. And then abrupt changes in mood and personality. You know, this was certainly the case with my grandfather who had Alzheimer's. He was the sweetest person on the planet. And then suddenly it was like, who is this person? He's so mean. And then, you know, as the disease progressed, he became sweet again. So, you know, just that roller coaster of emotions, you know, knowing what's going on there and that it's something to look at is critically important. We have a family that we work closely with in our chapter who she thought she and her husband were on the way to divorce because his personality had changed so much. And he was only 55 when he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. And she said it saved their marriage, frankly. And ironically, he was diagnosed on Valentine's Day.
Oh, wow.
So there's, you know, a lot of things that we encourage people to look for because there's the feeling out there that there's nothing that can be done. But when in reality, there's a lot that can be saved and a lot that can be done if it's caught early.
Wow. I can relate because I've got my husband's dad had Alzheimer's. My mom lived almost to 90. And so she had a little dementia and she would definitely do things like go grocery shopping and leave the groceries in the back and it would smell after a few days and then realize, oh my gosh, that was the, you know, the steak in the trunk of the car.
Right.
And then also another friend, her mother-in-law had Alzheimer's and she was very honest about things that she would never say in the past, and then she would say them and they would be hurtful, and she was not like that at all before. So I know exactly. It's kind of sad because it changes the personality, and you know, we would all hate to be that person who is saying things inappropriately or doing things that are so I guess it could be embarrassing, but that's the disease, and so we just need to be sympathetic about it and do what we can to help, and also to notice the symptoms and not take them personally, like, oh, well, look how mean he is. I'm going to get a divorce from him.
So, right. And we do have our 1-800 helpline. It's 800-272-3900. And we have dementia specialists available through that helpline. If someone's thinking that they're experiencing these symptoms or a loved one is, they can call and talk to someone free of charge 24/7 to have a more detailed conversation about possible next steps to take to ensure that they're looking at it closely and getting accurate information that they need to help them in the future.
So it's 800-872-8900?
It's 800-272-3900.
I'm glad you repeated that. I have a little memory loss too.
I talk fast sometimes. Sorry about that.
That's okay. So there's been some progress with a blood test that I read about that may help in early detection. Can you share about this?
Yes, this is really exciting. It could be a complete game changer. We just completed our Alzheimer's Association International Conference, AAIC. This year it was virtual due to COVID. And this research symposium usually has about 6,000 people from around the world. And because it was virtual this year, we had 31,500 attendees from 145 countries. And there were some really interesting results reported and outcomes of studies reported. And one of the most exciting is about the blood test that is really looking at how to accurately and very early on diagnose Alzheimer's disease, because with the technology that we have today, we know the pathology for Alzheimer's disease starts developing in people's brains 20 years before symptoms appear. So before those 10 signs I just talked about appear, things are happening, you know, in people's brains. And so our goal is to have a blood test that people take as part of a routine physical, you know, on an annual basis to see if this one particular protein, which was the exciting discovery talked about at the international conference, it's a p-tau protein 217, which is a very specific protein that makes up part of the biology of the Alzheimer's disease pathology in the brain. So Alzheimer's is tau tangles and beta amyloid buildup in the brain. So identifying this specific tau protein through a blood test correlated 98% to an accurate diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. So this is not ready for the doctor's office yet. There's still more verifying studies that need to happen, but this results of this work is very, very exciting to be able to save the really unreliable and way too long drawn out process of an accurate diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, because right now it's truly a process of ruling everything else out until PET scans are available through insurance, because right now they're only available to people in clinical trials or people willing to pay out of pocket, and it's a five-figure bill. It's not cheap. Uh-huh. So, you know, those things are things that the Alzheimer's Association is really advocating for moving into the mainstream so that people can get an early and accurate diagnosis. A blood test would be a huge game changer because it's something that people are used to doing, you know, giving your blood samples for your annual physical. You don't have to be embarrassed about, you know, what to talk about with your doctor if they see that protein or the indicator of Alzheimer's. Once we have a blood test, there'll be accurate, you know, available protocols for people to follow to get verified results and into the care that they need and planning that they need.
Oh, very good. So then they have the test so that, okay, so now you find out that someone is, you know, he has that signs in his brain that he or she will have Alzheimer's. So how does early intervention help once you know that they have the disease?
Yeah, it can be a real game changer even at this stage in the game, even though we don't have a viable treatment yet to halt the disease. If it can be caught early, people can make plans. They can be rearranging their household duties so they aren't in charge of the finances any longer, so there aren't mistakes. Like I talked about earlier, it can really preserve the financial well-being of the individual to know that they need to make arrangements to have really their affairs taken care of before they normally would have, you know, some defining event that would really necessitate that. And now with an early diagnosis, people can say, okay, I need to plan for this and be more thoughtful and careful. So it can really save family finances. It can save relationships, you know, as far as people's understanding. It can allow for families to learn how to better communicate with their loved one who is experiencing, you know, once they start to experience the symptoms of Alzheimer's, their families will be prepared for how to handle and communicate that versus the heartache and frustration and anger, you know, that can all be part of that journey. And ultimately, our goal is having this blood test defining people who are starting to show the pathology for Alzheimer's disease and having a drug that can really reverse that or halt the disease in its tracks before it interferes with people's daily living. So it just, you know, puts the brakes on it and they don't go down the path of, you know, full-blown Alzheimer's disease and die without really being the person who they were. That's really our goal, is to keep people whole and living a full life. And, you know, passing away is the person they always were, not someone who they would never want to be or their families don't recognize or know. So it's really important that we can get this early intervention, get the drug to address it and put an end to this disease.
So what are the drugs that help slow the deterioration?
So there's not any approved right now. We have quite a few that are in clinical trials, and there's one drug right now that's at the FDA for review. It's had a lot of press. It's called aducanumab, and it is for a very specific group of people with very early stage Alzheimer's disease, in the earliest stages, where this drug has been shown in clinical trials to reverse the pathology of the disease and people's cognition has improved. So it's a start, it's a baby step. If it is approved, you know, it will help a certain subset of people. It won't help people who have, you know, mid or late stage Alzheimer's disease, but the earliest cases that we can identify, if this drug is approved and they get this infusion and it's successful for them, they could have the reality I just described, or the hopeful reality that I just described, of having the disease halt in its tracks and not have the decline that people do experience. So we're hopeful. We're not saying it's going to happen for sure, but we certainly hope that the FDA sees that it can be something that benefits people in that very specific group, and that it will help them if it is approved. But right now, there's no therapy approved to reverse the disease. There are some drugs that really modify the symptoms, such as aggression or anxiety, sleep issues. There's more exciting drugs coming down the pike for the hallucinations, for all different types of dementia. There's a lot of therapeutics that are being worked on right now for people with the disease and to try and, halt the disease. So there's quite a bit in the works. We believe in many shots on goal, because the chances of something making it all the way through FDA approval, as we all know, are extremely low, because of the safety and efficacy that has to be demonstrated for something to receive FDA approval. And, you know, we're just very hopeful that the more therapeutics we get into the pipeline, the more that's going to be available to people as readily as possible.
Wow, very interesting. Now, I always hear about these different brain foods and certain things that you can eat to help with the brain, and that, you know, alcohol, if you have, you know, if it's Alzheimer's is hereditary in your family, that drinking alcohol is not a good thing. So there's all these, I don't know if they're truths or just speculation. Can you expand on that? And then also, when you talk about therapeutics, I just read about how essential oils can help with children with autism. So do the essential oils, like lavender and peppermint, are they also therapeutic for those with Alzheimer's, as far as you know?
So we don't have scientific evidence that any of those things are helpful. Unfortunately, I think that the key thing that we do recommend is, and on our website, we have 10 ways to love your brain. There's great tips there. But the foods that we recommend, because we get asked that all the time, you know, what about coconut oil? What about turmeric? What about this? And a lot of one thing in any way is probably not the best thing to do, and should definitely be discussed with your physician, because it could counteract some other medication that you're on for a very important purpose. So that's one piece of it. And especially any supplements and that sort of thing are very important to discuss with your physician. So we do not endorse or recommend any supplements whatsoever. It's strictly a conversation that people need to have with their doctor and take into account, you know, their unique circumstances, their medication, their family history, their risk factors, etc. What we do recommend is a healthy lifestyle. We always say heart health is brain health. So the mind diet, the Mediterranean diet, those healthy fat, low inflammation foods, in a wide variety, in moderation. Don't eat avocados all day, but incorporate avocado. Don't drink red wine all day, but if you're going to drink, have one glass of red wine. You know, that's more anti-inflammatory than a piña colada. So, keeping those things in mind of, heart health is brain health. Activity equals more blood and oxygen going to your brain, hopefully cleaning out, your brain as far as, those things that can accumulate. And sleep plays a big role in that too. Sleep is the time where our brains kind of, it's like when you stay at a hotel and you leave for the day and you come back and your room's clean. It's like you go to sleep and you wake up and your brain's a little cleaner. So you want to have high quality sleep. So those things are important. We launched at the Alzheimer's Association, the US Pointer Study, and we have sites around the country that are looking at lifestyle interventions to get proof of principle of what we can recommend and work on a public health message to everyone to take steps to decrease their chances of Alzheimer's and dementia. But one important study, really quick, is there was a study called the Sprint Mind Study, and it was a cardiovascular disease study. But what they found is by controlling blood pressure below 120 systolic, people had a much less likely chance of developing mild cognitive impairment. And mild cognitive impairment is the first step on the road to Alzheimer's and all other dementias, those very earliest signs of Alzheimer's disease. So with the amount of people who in this study, it was a very large study. If this were adopted on a nationwide level, there would be 2.5 million people less that have Alzheimer's by 2025 if just this one simple step was taken, because that many fewer people would experience mild cognitive impairment. So we already have, some evidence that cardiovascular health does improve brain health. And another interesting thing that just came out of the Alzheimer's Association International Conference is that these lifestyle factors impact people very early on in their lives, teenagers, people in their 20s who have high cholesterol, have overweight or obese BMIs. They are at higher risk for dementia later in life based on the research.
Wow, very interesting.
Blue Sea Care provides comprehensive care management to seniors and their families. Services include complete physical care for seniors who want to maintain their independence and state of health. The caregiving is combined with Art to Wellness, a program which uses the therapeutic benefits of the arts to assist with cognitive care for seniors. You can learn more about Blue Sea Care's programs at www.blueseacare.com.
So you were saying that sleep is very important. So if you could just let me know if this is rumor or truth. If you have trouble sleeping your entire life, are you more suspect to becoming having Alzheimer's symptoms or getting Alzheimer's disease?
Yeah, the information shows that quality sleep contributes to less chance of Alzheimer's, and people who do have mild cognitive impairment and dementia have proven to have poor quality sleep in some studies. So there is some evidence there that sleep is critically important. And it came out in AIC about 3 years ago, the different sleep studies. And I went to my doctor right away and got a CPAP machine, because the sleep apnea, that deprives your brain of oxygen, is really the important player here, I think, for the most part, because you want to make sure that your body's getting what it needs throughout your sleep, and also, quality sleep, so it can do that housekeeping that it needs to do. So So those things have been studied and proven to be very beneficial.
Oh, okay, great. Now, your association offers socialization, cultural, and arts programs like Blue Sea Care does. Can you expand on this and the benefits, especially for those with cognitive issues?
So we encourage everybody, caregivers and people with dementia, to have a lot of activity and experiences. So I think that it's critically important that these things are available. And we also offer education and support groups for caregivers and people at different stages of the disease. And that socialization in our early stage Alzheimer's group is very important, because we meet people where they are in the right stage of the disease, and don't take them too much further than where they need to be right in that moment, because there's a lot to anticipate. And having that connection, connecting people who maybe are just one little step ahead of them as far as the progression of their loved one. So they have, you know, someone to talk to that's, you know, really becomes a confidant and a friend. You know, those types of experiences are an important part of the work that we do at the Alzheimer's Association, and just very, very touching when you see, you know, the connections that these people are making, and the spark that lights up when they're able to, you know, do things that you know, are fun and quality time.
Right. It makes them feel like they're not completely lost to the disease, that there's still hope, that they can be creative or read a book or listen to music. So that's wonderful. Now, what can... You probably already talked about this a little bit. Actually, you did. What can caregivers and family do to help with slowing down the progression?
So I think that it's a very important question, and one that needs its own answer. You know, it's very important. Yes. What can loved ones do? Because there's more than people think. And I really wish that when my grandfather was sick, that we had known about the Alzheimer's Association and known about the tools and resources available to families and caregivers, because we do offer a class called Compassionate Communication, and it's free. It can be done on demand on our website, but that's really a game changer, because, you know, people with Alzheimer's or other dementias, you know, they tend to repeat themselves. They tend to talk about the past, and family members can get very agitated. And then that creates agitation for the person who has dementia, and they'll retreat even more, and then they decline faster. And that's just not what we want for our loved ones and our own, you know, mental well-being. We want to have, you know, a fruitful, meaningful time with the people that we care about. So this class, I think, is critically important for caregivers and family members, because it really helps to kind of peel away the onion to get to a meaningful conversation. Because the thing that is most important for people to know in living with someone with dementia is their most recent memories fade first. Mm-hmm. And their most deep-seated, earliest memories fade last. So the more you can direct the conversation to something earlier in their life, like, tell me about your honeymoon, tell me about your first job, who was your favorite dog, you know, that when you were growing up, not what was the dog's name that just died, because they won't remember that, you know, if they just have a recent pet, but, you know, what was your pet's name growing up? So things that take them back to early in their life, their childhood, those types of memories, I think are very nice. And it would be amazing what you would learn. My sister asked my grandfather one time about something. She was really good at caring for him. And we learned that he would have been at Pearl Harbor if he had not been injured a couple weeks before, because he was a naval aviator, and he was sent back to San Diego from Hawaii. So he missed Pearl Harbor. So I never knew that story. My sister found out that from him after he was already diagnosed, and, you know, was still able to recall some of those past memories. And So that was a piece of history we just never would have had. So these conversations and knowing how to have them and be patient, mm-hmm. and, you know, tips on how to redirect if someone's getting agitated, those can all make for a much more pleasant experience on this journey than a lot of the agitation that can occur. So that's really critical. The other really important thing is make sure that the person's getting sunshine, getting outdoors, taking a walk, that they're not just planted in front of a television all day, you know, that they're getting some activity that will help them. And keeping a solid routine is also really helpful. Mm-hmm. And getting rid of things that can be distracting, like a patterned rug or something that they might be worried they might trip over, you know, that type of thing is really important. And there's all sorts of tips for that on our website as well, as far as how to make your home more dementia friendly. You don't want to take away the things that are memorabilia and that they're used to, you know, that would create agitation, but things that could be dangerous, you want to be able to take care of. So those are things that can really be helpful. And then the caregiver has to take care of themselves. They have to make sure that they have a break, that they're contact the Alzheimer's Association. We can connect caregivers with resources to really help them get that break that they need and care for themselves. And it's heartbreaking when we hear a story about a caregiver passing away before their loved one with Alzheimer's.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. Yeah, it is difficult. And the communications, you definitely need to learn about how to communicate with someone with Alzheimer's. So that's, the course is Compassionate Communications, and that's on your website?
It's on our website. That is the name of the class, but you can call our helpline and they can give you information on all of our classes or visit our website. So easy to find.
Yeah. I just know that one of the things that you have to learn if you have a loved one with Alzheimer's is that they may be telling the same story over and over again, and you just embrace the story and comment that it's fascinating and wonderful instead of saying, no, you already told that story. You just told me that story. Don't even bother to do that, because that only will frustrate them. So just go along with it and just embrace whatever they say and just enjoy the moment.
Yeah, you can make it a lovely experience. If they're telling a story about the time that they went to Niagara Falls, you can say, what was your hotel like? What did you think about the sound of the water? You know, you can kind of just ask them questions about that experience versus thinking, I've heard this before, you know. Yeah. And, you know, nodding and smiling is not the same as engaging in conversation. So I think that it's really a helpful class that would benefit really every conversation, but especially someone with dementia.
Okay. Good point. So how has this pandemic affected the progress of your work?
So COVID-19 has really, you know, laid out things for all of us that we never anticipated. And in Alzheimer's Association, we've been handling things on various fronts. First and foremost, we moved our whole staff remote on March 12th, and we anticipate going back full time to our offices when there's a vaccine. So we take a very risk averse approach, because we deal with the most vulnerable people who are elderly, have comorbidities, or go home to those folks that they're taking care of that could be at greater risk. So we take that responsibility very seriously, not to put anyone we serve at risk. And so we did that. We moved all of our programs and education virtual, and we did not have one program that had to be canceled or postponed in Orange County. We were able to move seamlessly to online platforms and have people have what they needed, and obviously ramped up our one-on-one phone conversations to make sure that people were okay and had what they needed. We moved our fundraising events to either a year away or to a virtual or, you know, at home experience. So I'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. But we also looked at our research community. You know, we fund hundreds of millions of dollars in research around the world. And if researchers can't be in their lab, you know, what does that mean for them? And what does it mean for their next application? And how can we be supportive of the research community? So not only with AAIC being virtual and exposing, you know, tens of thousands of more people to the exciting progress and work and you know, generating ideas, we've contacted each of our 500 grantees that have research awards from us, found out what they needed, how we can help them. And we also have something called GAIN. It's the Global Alzheimer's Association Information Network, and it's a database of statistics that researchers can go to for free and not have to do all that pre-work. They can go in, look at samples, look at analysis, and take a leap to what they want to study in their lab based on all the data that's already been collected. So the silver lining in that is that researchers have time to mine this data. They have time to write papers and articles that they maybe did not have time for before. And they have opportunities to have conversations and collaborations with connections that they make at events like AAIC to really generate ideas. So, you know, the collaboration and conversation and information gathering has been a silver lining of this, but we did have to stop some in-person trials that have to start up again. So that delays the timeline of getting the answers that we want. And, you know, from a senior living and assisted living standpoint, you know, COVID-19, places were not prepared, and the government wasn't really prepared to help them. And so the Alzheimer's Association really stepped in, working with our elected officials at the state and federal level, and said these protocols need to be put into place. And so on our website, we have COVID-19 recommendations for local and state governments. We've advocated for policy issues, as I mentioned. And we also have resources for folks who, if they have someone in assisted living and they're having challenges, we have resources for them either through our helpline or on our website. But we also have resources for people who realize, you know, being at home with someone over this period of time, that they need more care than they can handle. And, you know, how to effectively move someone into assisted living is something that we also offer resources for. But really knowing that the disparities that have been talked about as it relates to COVID-19 in the Black community and the Latinx community and poor populations and older Americans being impacted so much greater by this disease, it amplifies the disparities that we already saw in Alzheimer's. It affects Blacks twice as often, Latinx 1.5 times as often. Obviously, you know, unless it's early onset Alzheimer's, people are elderly or older, aging. And it affects people who come from all walks of life, but a higher percentage are lower income and have more challenges in that regard. So these disparities mirror each other, and just seeing how difficult it is to respond and help at the level of the pandemic, we already knew that about Alzheimer's. And so what we are working on at the Alzheimer's Association is really a public health approach to make sure that everybody who needs care and support and accurate diagnosis is able to receive it. So we're really passionate about that. And I think with COVID-19, it's just heightened this passion because we've seen such an immediate and visible impact because, you know, it's all everyone talks about.
Yeah, it is heartbreaking. And I'm glad that the Alzheimer's Association stepped up like it has.
Yeah.
So any promise for a cure or prevention in the near future?
So we are always on that drive to make sure that we get there as quickly as possible. I think that these lifestyle interventions will definitely adjust a trajectory that, you know, isn't a good one right now to hopefully flatten that trajectory so that not as many people are impacted through a healthy lifestyle and better social interaction and all of those things that we know are important. We are just doing the studies to prove they're important so we can get the message out there and people will take it very, very seriously. Because it is very important to take care of ourselves throughout our whole life and be sure that we can do everything in our power to help prevent cognitive decline. And so the hope on the horizon is really the number of things that are in clinical trials right now. And it's more than we've ever seen in the history of the Alzheimer's Association. We were founded in 1980. And, you know, that's not very long, you know, 40 years to be where we are today with understanding the pathology of the disease, already having, you know, a drug that's in FDA approval that can clear out that pathology and show that there is cognitive improvement is huge in that short amount of time with the funding that we've had. It's been extremely small compared to other diseases such as cancer and heart disease and HIV/AIDS. HIV/AIDS is a great example of the infusion of billions of dollars to get to a treatment to make AIDS no longer a death sentence. Mm-hmm. Had a huge impact in that timeline. And so the Alzheimer's Association has been working really hard the last 5 years to increase NIH funding for Alzheimer's disease. And we've been able to quadruple it over the last 5 years to $2.8 billion. But it is still paling in comparison to the $6.8 billion that, you know, heart, cancer, AIDS, you know, they all get above that for research. And so we have catching up to do, but we're hopeful that every additional dollar gets us closer to the cure or the ways to prevent and reverse the disease. So, you know, we're looking at vaccines. We're looking at, you know, obviously lifestyle. We're looking at drugs to halt the disease, all different types of medicine. We're doing some venture philanthropy through our Part the Cloud initiative. And all of these things that we can do to accelerate the timeline give me a lot of hope.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm hopeful too. Now you've got your special promotional Walk to End Alzheimer's shirt on. And so can you tell us a little bit about it and how it's going to be different this year?
Yes, obviously walks will be different this year, and we're excited because it really gives us an opportunity for people to walk everywhere. This year, the Walk to End Alzheimer's is everywhere in your local community, and I think it's a gift in a lot of ways. You know, usually our Walk to End Alzheimer's, we come together as a big group and do our Promise Garden ceremony and all walk, and people feel connected and supported, and it's a beautiful, beautiful event, and we have great support from the community, from our participants and our sponsors, and we do again this year, and we're creating that same environment for people in their local communities. So you can have a neighborhood walk, you can hike a trail, you can, you know, go on vacation and walk on the beach, you know, whatever you want to do. But we're keeping all of our local walk dates. So our Irvine Walk to End Alzheimer's is still September 26th. Huntington Beach is October 3rd. And San Clemente is on October 11th. And what's going to happen each of those days is we have an app, an actual app for your phone for the walk. And you're going to log into that app on the morning of walk, and you're going to see the opening ceremony. You're going to have a chance to participate as an individual or a group with your family or virtually as colleagues, you know, in a business setting. We have a lot of great company teams that support us. So great way to engage in that and have, you know, being social, but going through that meaningful opening ceremony is such an important component of our walk. So we're saying we're walking everywhere. Walk isn't going to be virtual. You're not going to be sitting on a computer, you know, watching the walk. You're going to be out walking, and the app is going to track your steps, and it's going to cheer you on, and it's going to share our sponsor booths and have an interactive experience just like you would on walk day. So that part's really exciting. And then in each community where we hold walk, we're having a Promise Garden, drive-by Promise Garden that people can come and view so that they have that same meaningful, moving tribute to their loved one. The flower that represents their connection to Alzheimer's disease will be planted in a special location to be announced to everybody who signs up, so they'll have the opportunity to go visit that. So that's really great. And then they're getting their own kit in the mail with flags and a yard sign. And if they raise $100, they'll get a t-shirt, so they can really create their own walk experience right in their own neighborhood. And I'm really grateful that we've done this to make the experience accessible to people who maybe haven't been able to come out to our walks before because their loved one may be not wanting to leave the house or doesn't feel comfortable getting in the car, or it's too difficult for the caregiver to get the loved one in the car. Right. You know, they can walk around their backyard and, you know, push that wheelchair if they want and just have a beautiful day together. So we are really excited. And all the information about the walk is on our website at alz.org/walk. So it's very easy, or you can just Google walk to end Alzheimer's and you will get all the lovely information. But we have such an exciting feeling about this year that, you know, when things return to where we can all gather again, hopefully we'll keep some of the components so we can include everyone moving forward.
Great. Well, hopefully you'll have as large of an attendance as you had for the international conference.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah. It seems that the virtual does help in some instances to get more. Now, as we're wrapping this up, are there any sayings or quotes for inspiration that you'd like to share with us?
So I think my most inspirational quote is really our vision at the Alzheimer's Association, which is a world without Alzheimer's, because it motivates me every day, because I have my own personal journey with my family in with this disease. And I see each day how much people need us and how important it is for us to get the job done.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Anne. I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing with us all this very important information. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. It's nice being with you.
Thank you.
Thanks.